Okay. Everyone's ready? Yeah? Start? All right. So first of all, just to give some gratitude, appreciation to our hosts, the Cronenbergs, for the lovely space. To David Weiss, to Dr. Nordman, for the sustenance, taking care of that for the evening. Much appreciated. It's nice to see new faces. It's always nice to see new faces. So, we try to find a topic which is central, a central theme to grab onto for each Chag, for each of the Yom Tovim. Last year, we spoke about the concept of Rosh, why our sages chose to give this time of year the name of Rosh Hashanah, a name that's not found in the Chumash. And I thought this year something that really caught my attention that I found very fascinating this year is the concept of the shofar. The shofar. So ultimately, when we're trying to distill the essence of each one of these chagim, we want to understand what it's all about. We can look to the name of the chag, or we could look to the mitzvah. Here the name and the mitzvah go very much hand in hand. The name of the chag is Yom Teruah. It's the day of blowing. The whole day seems to be only about that one moment where we blow into the shofar, and that's it. We have all sorts of other things that we talk about. The day of din, of judgment, of kingship. But ultimately we see that the day seems to, the center of the idea of the day is that blowing into the shofar. And so we need to try to understand a little bit, what is it about blowing into shofar that somehow encapsulates the entire notion of what Rosh Hashanah exactly is. So I put out these sources. They're not necessarily maybe in the order that I want to go through them. You know, I'm still processing how I want to do it. But maybe we'll just go, I think we'll do the halacha. We'll just start with the basics in the halacha. And then we'll talk about some of the ideas behind it. And then towards the end, I want to do two things. I want to go through Rav Dessler's approach to understanding the concept of shofar. And then I want to talk about the actual physical shofar that we hold in our hands, why this is the item, in what way this item encapsulates all these ideas. How does it represent all of these concepts, right? Literally, a chunk of fingernails that you rip off of a goat's head, somehow within it is holding all these remarkable ideas. So hopefully we'll be able to get through those two ideas. Ram's, so we're going to... Ram's head, preferably. Well said. Goat's head, but a ram's head preferably. Okay, so if we'll start with the Shulchan Aruch. We'll see a mention in the Mishnah Berurah too. What Rabbi Ostreicher was pointing out. But we start in the Shulchan Aruch there, it's the third source there. Shofar of Rosh Hashanah. Mitzvato b'shel ayal ve'kafuf. The mitzvah of doing it is with some sort of a sheep, and it should be bent, it should be curved. B'di'eved, if you don't have that, kol shofar k'sher, man, any shofar you can get your hand on is kosher. Ben b'pshutim, ben b'kfufim, whether or not they're straight, whether or not they're curved, right? Turns out there are some animals that do have straight shofars. Antelopes have beautiful straight shofars. And b'di'eved, you could blow into an antelope's shofar on Rosh Hashanah and fulfill the mitzvah. Mitzvah b'kfufim yoter m'pshutim, better should be curved than straight. V'shel para, pasul b'kol gavna, a cow's horn, or any member of the cow family, bison, bulls, water buffalo, it's all no good. B'kol gavna, that means even b'di'eved, even from a Torah level, you're not allowed. V'ken karnei rov achayot, and so too the horns of the majority of animals, shehem etzem echad, zachrut psulim. So there are also horns that animals have which are, we're going to find out, different than a shofar. They're made out of etzem echad. They may have one solid piece of bone. Okay, so generally, if we wanted to, if we were taxidermists or zoologists or something, we would call one a horn and one a antler. Okay, antlers are not the same as horns. Even the word horn is a bit tricky because there are a few things that fall into the category of horn, which we're going to see don't have this special zachrut that the Shulchan Aruch mentions inside. So you cannot blow through a shofar which is made out of solid bone. Okay, so the antlers, first of all, most of them are not straight. They branch. And they're made out of a solid piece of bone. They're shed once a year. They actually come off entirely at the point of connection, as opposed to horns, which stay with an animal their entire life, and they're constantly growing alongside with the animal. And they have inside what's called zachrut. So what's zachrut? So it's interesting, the shofar itself is actually, when you remove the shofar, when you remove the horn from one of these bovids, one of these hoofed creatures that have these horns, inside there's actually a living bone structure that grows every year along with the animal, and it's a little bit porous. There's a matrix of different sinews and blood that goes through it, and on top of it there's actually a keratin shell, the same material as fingernails, that actually sits on top of that bone. So it's called a zachrut because literally it goes up, and this piece just literally sits on top of it, and that piece that sits on top, that's actually the shofar that we blow. That's called the keren, as opposed to an antler, which is a solid bone. It doesn't have those different pieces. It's just one solid piece. Okay, Mishnah Berurah says kemo ha-ra'imim ve'atzvim v'chadome, like we see in rams and deer and etc. Very interesting. The Mishnah Berurah says the reason these are no good, these different animals that the Shulchan Aruch was mentioning. Sorry, Re'emim are not rams. Re'emim and Tzvim, different types of cervids, different type of antler animals. Moose and things like that, and certain types of deer are no good, says the Mishnah Berurah, because it has to be hollow. The essential concept of a shofar is it has to be a hollow piece. The shofar hu milashen shfoferet, because a shofar comes from the language, the word shfoferet. That's how the Mishnah Berurah understands the basic understanding, the pshat. Where does the word shofar comes from? Shfoferet, a tube, something which is hollow. Okay, so that's the main concept. So what do we know so far? That a shofar has to be a hollow tube. It has to be from these bovids. It has to have this living bone inside of it, the zachrut that you take the shofar off of, and it's hollow, preferably curved, but straight is also okay. And that's what makes a shofar. Okay, so that's the basic concept of the shofar. It's made out of this cover, this keratin material, this fingernail material, and it's hollow. And somehow that's going to help us understand that these are all prerequisites that our sages tell us for having a kosher shofar. So if we used anything else, if you blew through an antler, somehow you would not be able to capture the essence of what Hashem wants you to understand in Rosh Hashanah. The whole thing would be no good. So let's go with maybe the most famous understanding of what the shofar comes to represent, and that's the understanding of the Rambam. I mean, we'll just throw it out there. Why does blowing a shofar, what does blowing a shofar do? What exactly is it supposed to do for us? How is it the simple physical act, right, making a noise through a hollow tube, something that every five-year-old child, you know, loves to do, happily does, right, grabs a soda bottle on Shabbos and makes all sorts of interesting noises. And that's somehow supposed to elevate us to tremendous spiritual heights. I mean, what does anybody want to throw out? Anything, basic thought.
You tremble with it's not a sound that you normally hear in the shofar. That specific sound that comes out, you don't normally hear it. So when you hear it, it does arouse you inside somehow, I think, or it's supposed to.
Okay, and then so then the question we have to ask is then why can't we just throw a pot against the floor? Right? Yeah, that's a loud, good sound. You don't hear it normally. It really stirs you up, wakes you up. What is it about the shofar? Seriously, thoughts. Throw anything out.
Did we hear a shofar at Mount Sinai?
We did hear a shofar at Mount Sinai.
There you go.
There you have it. Yeah.
We didn't hear pots.
We didn't hear pots. It's another. Then we have to ask another interesting question.
We have to clean our pots and pans.
We have to ask another interesting question: is did Hashem run out of violins? Right? When Hashem gave us the Torah, why did he choose the shofar? Did he not have any better, nicer instruments to use? But yeah, there certainly is some connection to hearing the shofar at Mount Sinai, for sure.
Does that have to do with tradition? Because of, that was back in the day, that was what was used.
What do you mean? Like used for what?
Was it shofar used back then? They didn't.
Trumpet.
What?
Wasn't supposed to be reminding us of Akedah Sitzfak
or something? So horn reminds us of the Akedah. Still have to answer an interesting question, why then we have to blow into it, right? Let's just walk around with it like we do with the lulav, wave it through the air, right? So these are all interesting questions. We want to get down to the bottom, try to understand what's going on. So we'll start with the Rambam, probably the most famous basic sort of understanding of what shofar is all about. The Rambam says, even though blowing the shofar is a gzeiras hakasuv, right? Rambam, ever the philosopher, will start and tell you, you want to know why we blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Because Hashem said so. Ultimately, that's going to be the reason why we do any mitzvah, is because Hashem said so. But of course, remez yesh bo, there are what the Rambam himself speaks about, the Tameh HaMitzvah. There are allusions, there are things that each and every mitzvah can awaken within us an opportunity to connect to Hashem in a new and unique way. So what is this remez? What is the allusion of the shofar? Klomar, Uru Yushenim, Mishinoschem, wake up you sleepy ones from your slumber. Yev and your damim, Hikitsu, Mitir Dematchem, wake up from all your tirdas, v'chipsu b'maaseichem, search in your deeds, chazru b'tshuva, zichru b'reichem, remember your creator, wake up, remember your creator. It's the Rambam continues very beautiful lashon, elo shochim et ha'emet behevle hazman. Obviously, we're not talking about people who are really asleep, but rather people who forget what's important, what we value. The truth through the Hevle Hazman, right? Well, I gotta, do this thing and go to that place and take care of that thing. And we get so caught up with all these things that we do in life, sometimes we forget there are deeper realities going on in our lives, that we're spiritual beings. We live in a world with an opportunity to connect to spirituality everywhere. And the shofar is to wake us up. Vishogim kol shinasam behevel v'rik asher lo'il v'yatzil. They get lost in this fog, in this daydream that has no benefit. Nothing's going to save them. He bitu l'nafsho seichem. Look into your nefesh, into your soul. Ve'itivu darcheichem umalalechem. Straighten your path and the results of where those paths will take you. Yazov kelechad michem darko hara. Leave your evil ways or your lacking ways. Umachshav to asher lo tova. And your no good thoughts. Okay?
I've always wondered about this Rambam.
Oh.
Whether Rambam is discussing Rosh Hashanah or the first day of Elul and the month of Elul.
He says it, the first line. Afal pi shetzkiat shofar b'Rosh Hashanah gzeiras hakasuv. Even though why do we do it? It's written in the Torah. But he says there's an allusion, is wake up and do tshuva. Okay, so that's similar, I think, to what Shlomo was saying, to what Yosef was maybe saying, right? That it's a call to action. It's supposed to stir us up and wake us up. It's interesting because it happens to be, and maybe this is part of the reason why I got so sucked into it, a conversation I've been having with my wife a lot lately about stirring and waking up, which is. So what happens? We blow the shofar for a month. We blow it on Rosh Hashanah. It stirs you up. It wakes you up. And then you fall back asleep. I mean, how long does it last with you? How long does it stay with you? What's the? It's literally, right? So we don't know what exactly the trua is supposed to be like on Rosh Hashanah. We know it's supposed to be a straight sound, a broken sound, and a straight sound. And we're not even sure what the broken sound is, if it's a or if it's a sound. And so, based on all the different combinations, we have a minimum of 10 shofar blasts that we have to do. But let's say we knew what it was. How long would the shofar blast take on Rosh Hashanah? 30 seconds? Maybe? That's your wake-up call. Once a year, 30 seconds, and that's supposed to shatter all these, you know, shatter you out of your slumber and wake you up and bring you to tshuva. And Shlomo's right. It is quite a remarkable sound, the shofar. It is really amazing, almost otherworldly, you know, sound. First of all, you don't have to be very good at shofar. You can make awful sounds. You're still Yotzi, right? It could be a weak sound. You're still Yotzi. It doesn't have to be a strong, powerful blast. A person could, you know, right? And as long as he did it for the right amount of time and more or less the right sounds, that's it. Yotzi, you fulfilled your obligation. So that's the Rambam. Let's look next at the Ramchal. We know that if we go to the Ramchal, we're going to start to get deeper, higher, however you want to say it. When you go deeper, you go higher. And more Kabbalistic. There's a lot. I promise you, once you start getting into the Kabbalistic works, you could spend years talking about all the significance of different parts of the shofar. We're going with, of course, the Derech Hashem, which the Ramchal wrote for those of us who would like to still wade through the Sea of Kabbalah wearing floaties and just get the basic concepts. So the Ramchal says that part of this mitzvah of blowing the shofar is to bring down from Hashem. We want Hashem to treat us with rachamim. We want Hashem to treat us with mercy. Something in this shofar blast changes Hashem's interaction with us from one of strict judgment to one of being merciful. And when you do it properly, right, this will be the results of it. This will be the fruit you gather from this action. Okay, so even though the idea is we want to bring down rachamim, all this has to do with the roots of this idea. They're true roots, meaning he's talking about deep spiritual ideas. And the idea with this is to actually wake up the forefathers, to strengthen ourselves in their merit, to wake up the mercy. This is a mem, but it should be a samech, lefayes midas hadin, to appease the attribute of judgment, because again, it's one of the Ramchal's principles that he speaks about throughout, that we never just ignore judgment and go straight to mercy. Somehow, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts towards us with mercy, we're still fulfilling in some aspect the attribute of judgment. We'll have to see how that is. Lagbir atov alara, to strengthen the good over the evil. Lekapod kochot hara, we're going to overwhelm the strengths of evil, and we're going to take away all the strength from the mekatregim, those who come to accuse us in Rosh Hashanah for all the sins that we have done. And we should have the kavana, we should have in mind that Hashem should use His exaltedness to rule us in unity, and to look over our transgressions. And all this is the mitzvah of shofar when it's connected properly with tshuva from the Jewish people. Okay? So now the Ramchal takes... We started with something simple in the Rambam, which sounded like an alarm clock. Hey, wake up! Time to do tshuva! Right? That actually would be a great alarm clock for the month of Elul. Wake up! Time to do tshuva! Yeah. Okay. Well, can we make an app like that? Maybe we could do that? See how effective that is.
Probably exists.
Maybe it exists, yeah. Here the Ramchal goes further, deeper, higher, and he says, really, when you blow the shofar, the idea is it's supposed to take all the strength away from all the accusing angels that come to accuse you of all your transgressions, and we're going to overcome the forces of evil, and we're going to take Hashem from his chair of justice, where he's supposed to judge us on Rosh Hashanah, and we're going to move him over to the chair of mercy, so he'll judge the Jewish people from a place of mercy.
All the clauses in this paragraph focus on Hashem, except for one.
Good, excellent question. Good eye. We see that part of this process somehow has to do with the awakening, grabbing onto the merits of the forefathers, and that's somehow connected to the blowing of the shofar and the process of being able to bring Hashem from one chair to the other. So, well noticed. Okay? So that's the Ramchal.
But isn't it in the merits of the forefathers we're talking about? Or
I mean, that's...
Isn't that what we're pointing out to?
Litchazek bezchutam, to strengthen ourselves in their merits. So we see a connection now to shofar as something that has the ability to overcome evil, to take away the power of the accusatory angels from accusing us, moving Hashem from one chair to the other, from judgment to mercy, and somehow that all also as part of it is awakening this element of connecting to the merits of our forefathers. Yeah.
I'm a little unclear. So all of this good stuff, the anti-evil stuff, happens if you blow the shofar, or if you're one of the people that hears the shofar?
Okay, it's a good question. So there's actually the mitzvah is to hear the sound of the shofar. That has some interesting ramifications in halacha. And so even if a person is only hearing the sounding of the shofar, it's the sounding of the shofar that does all of this
stuff. Does it have to be intentional listening, or if you're walking by and you happen to hear it, you're okay?
Well, again, whenever we fulfill a mitzvah, you have to have two intentions. The intention of the one who's doing the mitzvah for the sake of the other person, and the intention of the person hearing. And there's with shofar, it makes a difference because I could be blowing shofar not for the sake of a mitzvah. I could be blowing shofar because I'm trying to do when the saints go marching in. So I have to have intention to fulfill the mitzvah. Different song? When the avos go marching in. All right. Some people have different sensitivities, yeah. When the avos go marching in on your shofar. Okay. So if you ever want to see... let's do Reb Sadia first. Okay. Reb Sadia also famously brought down in a lot of Sephardi machzorim. Maybe they brought down in some of the Ashkenazi machzorim as well. Reb Sadia has a list of different allusions that he finds in the shofar blast. So I brought here number 6 because I'm going to tie all these hopefully together with Rav Dessler in a moment. It's to remind us, as Yosef pointed out, right? Yosef, if you're looking for someone who's fishing through Sephardi Machzorim, now you know who it is. Yosef knew this Reb Sadia. The shofar blast is to remind us of the binding of Isaac. Shemasar nafsho laHashem. That the whole merit of the binding of Isaac was that Isaac was willing to give his life to fulfill Hashem's Ratzon, Hashem's desire. So too, we give over our nefesh, anachnu nimsor nefshenu, or we would give over our nefesh, for Kedushas Hashem. Okay. And his memory should go before us for good on the Yom HaDin of Rosh Hashanah. Yeah? So the blowing of the shofar connects us to Akedas Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac, that should... And all of a sudden, Rav Sadia seems to bring a new idea into this that we haven't seen before, which begs the question how it's connected, of course, to the shofar, which is Mesiras Nefesh. We blow the shofar, and it is a commemoration of the binding of Isaac. And the binding of Isaac, what was special about that? That it was all about Mesiras Nefesh, about self-nullification towards Hashem. And that memory, that goes up to bring us a good judgment on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so far we have a lot of different disparate ideas maybe that for us are not exactly clear how the shofar is the piece that's going to bind all of these ideas together. I brought here also the shloah. The shloah is pretty amazing. If you want to see it, you go into the shloah. Has a section where he goes through different tractates in Shas, different masechtas. And Rosh Hashanah, in the section of the shloah called Or HaChaim, he has different sections. Some of them deal with halacha, some of them... So in Or HaChaim, He says, based on the 11 mitzvahs of shofar, and it's an idea that we speak about often, that oftentimes the more you look into the halacha behind something, what are the rules behind this thing, we often actually get deeper and deeper insights into the spiritual nature and the spiritual reality of this thing, because that's what is shaping the halacha. So based on the 11 halachos that the Shlah brings down on the shofar, he brings down a list of important philosophical messages we're meant to get from those 11 halachos. So here brings number 14. He says, you should know, anytime there's a mention of the word shofar in all these different halachos that we speak about, which I brought above, says the Shlah, what I mean to tell you is that I'm talking about Balei Tshuva. Balei Tshuva are called shofar. The Shloah says the shofar is the representation of the ability for a person to do tshuva. V'nirmaz Balei Tshuva b'shem shofar. Where do we see any connection to the concept of a Balei Tshuva in a shofar, or in the name of the shofar? Al shem shitzarich habal tshuva liyafut masav v'lishapram. That he has to take his deeds and beautify them, and lishaper, sometimes Chazal use it to mean to beautify, but also it means to make good, to fix them up, to straighten them out. V'chen isa b'medrash, he brings a proof from the medrash. Tiku b'chod shofar, right, that we say this Tehillim at least once a week. What is Chodesh? Chidshu ma'aseichem, renew your deeds. Shofar, shapru ma'aseichem, straighten your deeds out, make them good. Also, shofar, he says, is an acronym, shefel ruach. Person should be of a lowly spirit, right? That's what you need on Rosh Hashanah, to be shefel ruach, to be of a low spirit, to go bent over, like the shape of the shofar, which he brings in Halacha Dalet. So just to just recap it for a second, now the Mishnah Berurah brought us the basic word of the word, definition. Comes from the word shfoferet, a tube. The Shloah, going into deeper ideas, says it actually comes from the word leshaper. Shofar comes from the word leshaper. It represents the ability to change your deeds. It represents the ability to change your actions. The shofar in itself is the representation of the Baal Tshuva. Yeah, Yosef.
You could look at it from a physical standpoint as well. You look at a shofar, at least in its initial when it's still attached to the animal, or immediately after you take it off, it's a tomb. It's solid. It's and you look at a Baal Tshuva and you can say the same thing, where initially, like, his heart is like a tomb, like it's solid, and eventually you take out the inside of the shofar and you make it hollow, and then it's able to speak to Hashem. It's able to, like, to come out to make a sound.
Beautiful. Very nice. So at the end, I want to talk about the different physical characteristics of the shofar, and we'll go through different ideas like that. Beautiful. Very well said. Okay, so let's just... we have a few points. The shofar is the point of Hisorarus. It's to wake us up. More than that, it's to bring Hashem from one chair to the other through the merit of our forefathers. Says the Rav Sadia that it's all about the Mesiris Nefesh of the Akedah. And so the Shlach says it represents our ability to go from the darkness to the light. Oh, just like that. The ability to do tshuva, to renew our deeds, to fix our deeds. Now, I did not attach this Rav Dessler. I would have liked to have, but that would have taken more time than I had to chop it up and put the right pieces in the right places. Two pieces of Rav Dessler. I'll bring one piece first and the second one later. Okay, so we know that there are, in the tefillah, in the prayers of Rosh Hashanah, there's three sections to the tefillahs. There's something called Malchuyos, there's something called Zichronos, and there's something called Shofaros. There are three aspects that we need to connect to and remember on Rosh Hashanah. One is God's kingship. The other one is this concept of Zichronos, that everything is always before Hashem. Right? Even though for us, we recall things in memory, but everything stands before Hashem at all times. And Shofaros, the idea of the blowing of the shofar. Now, what's interesting is that Chazal actually tell us like this. Amru lifnei malchuyos kedei shetam lichuni. Why malchuyos? Why do you say malchuyos in Rosh Hashanah? In order for you to exalt me, to make me the king, to coronate me on Rosh Hashanah. Zichronos kedei shiala zichronchem. Zichronos, in order so that I shall bring you before me, you should be remembered before me. Ubima, and how is all this happening? B'shofar. So we see the shofar itself is the tool that brings us to Malchuyos, and it's the tool that brings us to Zichronos. So we have to understand how. First of all, Rav Dessler a little bit earlier starts with something very interesting. There's a machloket in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. And on the, I think, Daf Lamed, where is the Gemara? On Lamed Beis, interesting. That should be an easy one. It's all about the lave. There's a machloket over there between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda as to which verses we can use to represent these different concepts. And they have this machloket by Malchuyos as well. That Rabbi Yossi says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Malchus, Shema. What could be more Malchus than the Shema? Rabbi Yehuda says, that's not Malchus. V'idata yom v'shvos el avavecha, ki Hashem hu Elokim, ein od. Malchus, says Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda says, that's not Malchus. Ata reisel adas ki Hashem hu Elokim ein od milvado malchus. Divrei Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Eino malchus." It's very interesting. We see that Rabbi Yehuda is looking for the word melech to appear in the verse. If the word melech isn't there, it's not malchus. Rabbi Yossi speaks about the unity of Hashem. So Rav Dessler wants to explain the machloket in a very interesting way. He wants to say that there's two ways you could be mamlich Hashem. Two ways you could make Hashem the king. I have all sorts of desires, things that I want to do. And Hashem doesn't want me to do them. So one thing I could do is I can force myself to not do these things because I don't want Hashem to crush me. Right? I don't want to get squashed. And because I don't want to get squashed, I'll force myself not to do these things. I don't want to make Papa angry. If I make Daddy angry, right? David, what happens when we make Daddy angry? We don't want to make Daddy angry. So we hold back our desires. They're there. We didn't nullify our desires. They still exist. But we're subjugating them in order to not get the big daddy in the sky angry. That's one way that you could be Mamlech Hashem. The other way you could be Mamlech Hashem, instead of subjugating your desires, is you sublimate your desires. Rabbi Yossi comes along and says, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. If you understand that everything in your life is coming for from Hashem, coming to bring you towards a specific place, a purpose, you feel connected, you feel love towards Hashem, now all of a sudden, all your desires, you want, you just want to do what Hashem wants, not because you're scared, because you want to do what Hashem wants. You want to make Hashem proud. You believe in the mission. You're connected to the purpose of everything Hashem's doing in the universe. So it's basically, are we making Hashem the king out of fear? Are we making Hashem the king out of love? By the way, the halacha on Rosh Hashanah is like who? What?
Out of fear or out of, what do you call it?
Out of love. Well, is it like Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Yehuda? We bring the psukim of Rabbi Yossi. We bring the psukim of Rabbi Yossi. So according to Rav Dessler, on Rosh Hashanah, when we're mamlich Hashem, we make Hashem the king. We want to make Hashem the king out of a place of deep love. So it's all about affecting our heart, changing our heart for wanting to do Ratzon Hashem. That's the malchus of Rosh Hashanah. Isn't just, Hashem, you're the king. I know nobody's more powerful than you. I'll do what you want me to do because, right? As opposed to, Hashem, I'm changing my heart and I want to do all these things because you want me to do all these things. And those are the two aspects which the shofar is going to affect. And because we're changing our heart, right, and all these things that we talk about, the accusing angel and the din and the satan, right, obviously all these things are happening inside of us, right? The kategor that we speak about, the accusing angel, where is he? He's the satan that lives inside of us. He's the one that's going to come and testify against us on the Yom HaDin. How do we take away the koach of the satan? If I can bring my heart to a place where I just want to do Ratzon Hashem, at that point the satan doesn't have anything to say. Because if I'm subjugating my desires, I'll do it Hashem, because if I don't, you'll squish me. The satan comes and says, look, all those desires are still there. They didn't go anywhere. The second the fear fades, he's going to do it again. But if you come place from Ahava and you're changing your heart, right? So now you've sublimated all of these desires. You're saying, I just want to do whatever Hashem wants me to do. At that point, the satan doesn't have what to say anymore because you've now sublimated all your desires to the Ratzon Hashem.
You're sublimating or you're changing?
Well, you're elevating them, right? Saying whatever drives and desires I want to steer them, I want to channel them towards Ratzon Hashem. So that's why, says Rav Dessler, there's all these sorts of interesting things like why you can't use the horn of a cow because it's connected to Cheta Egel. And if you blow from a cow's horn, maybe you inside will start to think about Cheta Egel. You'll start to have different doubts about the unity of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And at that point, you give power to this kategor, to this accusing angel that we're trying to remove on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so how do all these things bring us, how does the shofar bring us to that? And how does the shofar bring us to Zichronos as well? So, Rav Dessler brings Rav Sadia over here. And basically what he says is that when we blow the shofar, it's to remind us about Akedas Yitzchak. That's the whole idea. When we blow, we're supposed to think about Akedas Yitzchak. What do we see in Akedas Yitzchak? We see in Akedas Yitzchak that Avraham and Yitzchak were willing to be Moser Nefesh to take their desires. Neither of them wanted to do that, I promise you. Nobody wants to be slaughtered, and nobody wants to slaughter his son. But they took their desires and sublimated towards Hashem. That's the Zichronos we want on Rosh Hashanah. To say, look, I have all sorts of transgressions. I probably transgressed just before I got to shul. I'm not saying that I didn't, Ribbono Shel Olam. I know who I am. But when you remember me, I want you to remember that my heart and my eyes go towards the Avos. Right? That's the idea that we saw in the Ramchal about being Misorer, the Schus Avos. What's the Schus Avos? Where did Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, what's their great merit? Their great merit is Mesiras Nefesh. That they always sublimated their desires to go do the desire of Hashem. That's what the Akedah brings up. And that's what we're asking Hashem to remember when we blow the shofar. We're saying, look, we know we're faulty, but these are our avos, and this is where we want to go. This is who we want to be. We want to be a nation of people who are Moser Nefesh. We want to give up our own desires to do your desire every time we hear the shofar. And so shofar brings us to awakening up, awakening those schuyos. Now, very interesting thing to get back to Malchuyos. Says Rav Dessler, he brings this whole idea that we saw from Rav Sadia about Mesiras Nefesh specifically. And he brings over here the Zohar in Parshas Pinchas, Ashrei Am Yodea Trua, a very strange verse. Fortunate is the nation that knows the blowing. What does it mean to know the blowing? Lo Ksiv Shomeh O Tokea El Yodea. Doesn't say the nation who hears the blowing. That would make sense. Fortunate is the nation who hears a shofar blast. No. Doesn't say Tokea. Fortunate is the nation who blows the shofar. Fortunate is the nation who knows the blasting of the shofar. Something obviously deeper. Inun de Yadon Raza de Trua. Those of us who know the secrets of the blast. So apparently it's not good enough to hear it. In some way, obviously, you did something by listening. But fortunate is the nation that understands the secret behind the depth, the sod of what is happening when the shofar is blown. Yitkarvun lemehach be'or panav dekudsha brichu. We bring ourselves closer to walking in the light of Hashem. That's which light of Hashem are we talking about? Right, that's the end of the verse. Bor panecha yehaleichun. Ashrei am yodea trua. Bor panecha yehaleichun. When they understand the secrets of the blast, they walk in the light of Hashem. V'da or kadama de ganiz kuchabrichu letzidikaya. That's the light that Hashem hid away for the tzaddikim at the beginning of the creation of the universe. So now what we're saying essentially is if we can understand the fundamental secret concept of what happens when we blow the shofar, we're connecting ourselves to the light that Hashem hid for the tzaddikim. That's how powerful this concept of the shofar blast is. So what is this secret? What are we talking about? Says the Zohar further, Raza de Trua, Kimo dechsiv, what's the secret of the Trua? As it's written further on, Troem b'shevet barzel, Pasuk in Tehillim, that you shall be beaten with a staff of iron. That is the secret of Trua. Troem b'shevet barzel. You shall beat them with a staff of iron.
Now we all feel better.
Yeah. Peirush. What does that mean? Kabbalas Yisurim Ba'ahava. The secret of the shofar, the thing that hearing the shofar is supposed to awaken in us, we're supposed to attach ourselves to, is the ability to receive hardships in life, challenges in life, from a place of joy. That is the secret, when we get down to the bottom of it, says the Zohar, of what's happening when you hear the shofar. You come to a place of accepting all the judgment of Hashem with joy. This is the highest, right? A person who can do such a thing is able to connect to the highest, deepest levels in Shemayim. And this, Rabbi Yoshia says, Ashrei Am Yodea Trua, brings here the Vayikra Rabba, the Medrash. V'kiein umas olam yodim la'ariya. What? The nations, the other nations of the world don't know how to blow a shofar? What's so special about us? El Shei Yisrael makirim l'ratzot et debora b'trua. We know how to make Hashem happy when we blow the shofar. V'omed mekisei din l'kisei rachamim. He goes from one chair to the other. These ideas we spoke about in the Ramchal. Right? We change the midas hadin, the attribute of judgment, to the midas, to the attribute of justice. Now, to wrap it up, he brings a stunning Yaros Dvash, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz. Shofar, blowing a shofar is midas hadin. Right? Once the shofar is blasted, the makatrigin, they can no longer come in behind the pargod, the special curtain, until the shofar is blasted, and then the din begins. And then, right, everybody comes in. So, what's the blast that begins the din? The shofar blast. Who's blowing the shofar? We are. Now, if you're being called into court, and you know that it's not looking good, and they say the court case cannot start, go on, live your life, do whatever you want, the court case starts when you push this button. Who's going to push the button? You'll find a nice glass box. You'll clear out some space in the basement. You'll put the button inside, and you'll go on with your life. Why would you push it? We blow the shofar. And this is what confuses the satan. Because the person who's going to be tried is coming to the Ribbono Shel Olam and saying, Hashem, I'm here. I'm ready. Try me. Says the Yaros Vash, says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, when we blow the shofar, when we come on Rosh Hashanah, essentially what we're doing when we come to Shul is we're saying to Hashem, Hashem, I'm not perfect, but whatever you decide, I'll take it. Whatever you decide for me this year, based on my behavior, I'll take it b'ahava, I'll take it b'simcha. I'm in Yom Tov clothes. I'm coming to shul. I'm davening to you. I want you to, I'm starting the din. The second we do that, Hashem moves from the kisei adin to kisei rachamim. What's the accusatory angel going to say now?
Is it Yonatan Eibeshitz saying if you didn't blow the shofar, it wouldn't be Yom HaDin?
Good question. Because obviously there's still some sort of a Yom HaDin. But we see that the din in Shemayim waits for us to blow the shofar. What would happen if we didn't blow the shofar? Good question. Need some thought. But just like Shira, that the Malachim wait for Shira for us, so to Yom HaDin, everybody's waiting for us to blow the shofar. And we blow the shofar, we throw ourselves at Hashem's feet, and we are basically showing Hashem that we want to be Makabul, we want to receive whatever din He has for us, B'simcha. Right? We're celebrating Rosh Hashanah, which is a day of din, and saying, Whatever you want, we'll accept it. And of course, that's that malchus that we're talking about. So the blasting of the shofar, it brings us to this place of mesiras nefesh, the zichronos, remember who our forefathers were, and us saying, and we're ready to be moser nefesh, if that's what you need from us, right? Because you're the melech malchei hamelechim. And we've come to you out of a place of a joy to do that. So, says Rav Dessler at the end, we're receiving it besimcha, and we get to this. This brings us to Malchus, right? We're basically throwing our arrogance in front of Hashem and saying, humbling ourselves before Him. And this connects us to the merit of our forefathers and their ability to be Moser Nefesh for everything that Hashem does, that we receive upon ourselves the din, we actually awaken the Rachim. So that gives us a lot more insight into this whole Ramchal about waking up and grabbing onto the merit of the forefathers, moving Hashem from one chair to the other. Reb Sadia, how the connection to the Akedah through all of this. Okay. Now, that's Rav Dessler's approach. It clears up a lot. Does anybody want to ask any questions before we go to the physical aspect of the shofar about Rav Dessler's approach or how it ties up a lot of these concepts that we've been speaking about? Yes, no, maybe, no. All right. Okay. You can ask questions later also. Okay. So here's something that I spent a lot of time thinking about. Probably too much time thinking about it. Maybe not. I don't know. The concept of a shofar and this idea of the word keren, our sages tell us, Chazal tell us, you can only use a keren and etzem is no good. So in Hebrew, for me this was a big chiddush, and I banged my head against a few Israelis trying to see if they knew Hebrew, which is surprising sometimes. But there are two words in the Hebrew language. There's a word called etzem, etzem adavar, and there's a word called keren, v'keren kayemet lo l'olam haba. What's the difference between an etzem, etzem shel davar, and a keren, keren shel davar? We only have one Israeli. It's too much pressure. We'll look a different direction. Yes, chiluk. ודאי שיש חילוק, יש שתי מילים. What's the difference between etzem and a keren? It's very interesting. I remembered in the back of my mind a piece from Rav Moshe that was in Parshas Bechukotai that speaks about the concept of etzem. Etzem, a bone, is the etzem shel adavar. It's the thing itself. The idea of a bone is that it doesn't change. It is what it is. A person grows. At some point, the bone stops. And that's it. That's where the bone's going to be for the rest of his life. Right? To stay on board with Dr. Abrams, certainly the bone can lose density, and that can cause it to, right, if it doesn't have enough calcium. But for the most part, conceptually, the bone stops growing. The muscles, the fat around it are constantly growing and changing and that way. But the bone, the concept of the bone is the etzem adavar. It is what it is.
There is a turnover. Over.
Bone turns over. Renews itself.
Right. But it tends to remain the same shape and size once it reaches adult size.
Yeah. So that's the idea of an etzem. And Rav Moshe was speaking about this concept with the idea of an etz. He says the word etzem and the word etz come from the same root. The etz is the same thing. The etz doesn't change. It is what it is. But the etz has perot. It has totsa'ot, things that come about because of it. So that's the concept of the etzem. And then you have the totsa'ot from the etzem. Etzem and totsa'ot. Right? The thing itself and the thing it results. That's very interesting because in there, he mentions briefly, and this is where I had to tear down the walls, is this concept of keren. He seems to explain the concept of the seed as the keren, that the Karen is something that could be mitgalgel, it can transform into a pre. So a Karen seems to actually be a some sort of a middle step between the etzem and the pri. You have the Karen. So what do, how do I think I understand the concept? I think I understand the concept as follows. When I give you a loan, right, and I hand you cash, so I'm not really giving, the etzem, the loan, doesn't really go into your hands. You have a medium for transferring the loan in different ways, which is the keren, which you get in money. And that money you can turn into all sorts of things. That money you can turn into different commodities. And those are the pirot. And then based on the profit you make, even if you hand me back, you know, a pile of stocks, within that stocks, my keren is still there. It's not the etzem adavar. It's the keren, it's the value, it's the tool to be able to apply this thing and bring it out into the world. That's the concept of a keren. And why do I feel so strongly about this? Because Chazal say, there's an etzem and there's a keren. And an etzem can never signify the concept we want to express in a shofar. Only a keren can do it. And it's very interesting because that word keren, right? The only other way it appears in the Torah is as the concept of rays of light. And a ray of light is not the etzem adavar. The etzem adavar is a million years away. You never get to the etzem adavar. You only get the keren, the or, right? Or in contemporary Hebrew, lahakrin, the projection of what's actually there. And then we get the fruit, which is the light. Chazal also used this word for keren to represent a place where two lines meet, right? So again, the keren is just a point, but it allows this projection into infinite space between the two lines which are coming and meeting there. So what's the idea? The concept of the etzem is that it's dead, it's stiff, it doesn't change, it doesn't allow room for change. A keren allows the ability to project something out into the world. This keren, right, it's a shfoferet. It's an empty tube, ultimately. All it is, it's a vessel to move one thing from one place to another. Now, Yosef, tell me if this is connecting to your idea. When the keren sits on the goat, or the ram, or whatever it is, you have a fine point, a nikudah, which goes up and it becomes more and more gas. It becomes broader until it ends in a behemoth, until it ends in a goat, until it ends in a cow. That's what happens is the keren expands. It's starting at a point which is very refined and it's expanding into an animal. We take that keren and we flip it the other way around. And we say, you're right, spirituality generally comes down and becomes less refined, it becomes more physical. But a person has a point of spirituality down here, which he can point back in the other direction. We take the keren, we turn it around, and now we're taking, Hirsch speaks at length about this beautiful idea, you have something in you called the breath. And that breath represents the neshama that Hashem blew into you. Hashem blew a neshama into you. But you're so used to breathing it in and out every day, you don't notice it. But when you can focus it to one point and you can project it, all of a sudden, you say, whoa, look at that sound. I shook the heavens by just letting my neshama express itself. That shofaret, that empty tube, right, with the neshama being blown into it, is, by the way, fascinatingly enough, a literal act of Mesiras Nefesh. I'm being Moser my Nefesh into the shofar in order to accomplish this task. We said that everything about Rosh Hashanah is all about Mesiras Nefesh, about finding the Ratzon Hashem. I want to get back to a place, a Nekudah Pnimi, where I see the unity of Hashem. I'm Moser Nefesh, I put my Nefesh into this tube, and I'm literally reenacting the way Hashem created Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon was an empty vessel. And Hashem put in Neshama. I want to go back to the place where I can be an empty vessel, where I can feel my Neshama once again. And when I bring myself back to that place, it makes a tremendous racket in the heavens. There's an amazing noise that comes out of that Mesiras Nefesh. When I do tshuva, when I go back to that original Adam Arishon, the empty vessel with Hashem blowing a Neshama into it, that potential exists in me always. And so it has to be a Karen. It has to be an empty tube. It has to be the ability to project, to grab onto your essence and bring it out into the world. Something else which I found very fascinating about the whole thing is that we spoke about different type of horns. It was tremendous fun for me learning about all these different types of horns. The horns from the bovids are quite unique. The closest thing maybe are the horns that you find on certain reptiles. No other animals have the same type of horn made out of the keratin shell. All tusks and things like that are all actually made out of enamel, same stuff as teeth. Rhinoceros horns are actually made out of hair. The only animal, these bovids, are the only ones that have a horn made out of the same material as our fingernails. Why was that fascinating to me? Because the Zohar, the Medrash, Pirkei Rabbi Elazar speak about that Adam Arishon before the Chet was completely made out of Tziporin. That's the Nekudat HaMaga. It's the shell that protected him from the impurities of the outside world. So again, the shofar is just to represent this vessel.
He was a giant shofar.
Adam Arishon was a giant shofar. His neshama resonated so powerfully and so clearly inside of it that it was making tremendous impact in the world around him all the time. So another concept that I found in the idea of shofar, and like this. Now I want to go back to the other thing that we spoke about, which is the wake-up call. It's very interesting. So my wife and I have been speaking a lot about, there's someone who came up with something called the five-second rule. Came up with it, I'm saying, you know, had a nice way of sharing this insight with the world, that when a person wants to stop themselves from doing something or get themselves to do something, you count backwards from five. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Why? So now we're going to grab onto the Lashon of the Rambam very beautifully. Being a sleepwalker doesn't mean that you're sleeping in the world. It means you're too caught up with routines and patterns and cycles. When you count from five backwards, right, the whole concept that this woman developed was you have to switch your brain into a cognitive mode, right? You have to become very intellectual, remove yourself from all the emotional stuff. And it's enough to allow yourself to change your course of action. So the blast of the shofar, all we want to do, all we're looking for on Rosh Hashanah is to have one moment where I feel, yes, I have a neshama. Yes, I have a nefesh, I can connect to it. I'm capable of doing Ratzon Hashem. I am capable of setting aside my own desires to do Ratzon Hashem. And if we can grab onto that moment strong enough on Rosh Hashanah, that creates tremendous changes in Shemayim and then changes tremendous changes in us because we get heavenly assistance in trying to express that into the world. So earlier piece in Rav Dessler, just to, for this idea, he speaks about Yaakov. That Yaakov, it says, as he was walking to Lavan for the first time, realizes, whoops, when I was walking, I didn't pay attention. I walked right past Har Moriah. I walked right past the place of the Akedah. I have to go back. Why does he have to go back? I mean, think about it. Yaakov hasn't slept in 14 years. He's been learning nonstop. He's already over 60 years old. He probably didn't miss it by a few meters. He probably missed it by, you know, maybe a few hundred kilometers, right? He's on his way up to Iraq. He turns around and says, I have to go back. Why does he have to go back? Because Yaakov understands the depth of this idea that you cannot pass up a chance for a spiritual awakening. If you can have a moment of Yisorerus, a moment of spiritual awakening, to go back to your essence, to connect yourself back to what you're all about, the Akedah, Mesiras Nefesh. At that point, says Rav Dessler, he had Kvitzas Haaretz. Space-time no longer existed for him. Because when he connected himself so strongly to Har Moriah, to the place of the Akedah, so Hashem says, okay, so you're there. And at that point, right, the concept of space and time no longer exists for him. So, it's a lot, but trying to find some threads to pull together all the different ideas of the shofar, where it comes from, how it's expressed in the form of the physical shofar that we hold, what exactly we're meant to be thinking and trying to accomplish on Rosh Hashanah, and the idea to hopefully grab on in a healthy, appropriate way into the awakening that we're supposed to feel of that, the Rambam's famous awakening on Rosh Hashanah when we hear it. Okay, so anybody have any questions? Comments? Baruch Tiyah.
Send me the audio.
Okay.
Maybe the last 2 minutes.
Okay. Tough. Okay, Ksiva Chasima Tova Lekulam.